So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Mr. Ass, you can call yourself 1999 King of the Ring.
You're damn right. You know, there's a lot of people out there that didn't think Mr. Ass knew how to do it by himself. Well, guess what? I did, because I am now king. You see, no more people riding on my back, getting on the coattails. Adios, Mr. Ass. Where are we going? When can you take me to the top? You know, it's everybody on my back. Now I'm by myself, you see? And this is the first step in becoming the greatest, and I do mean greatest, WWF champ.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.
It's Wednesday, and that means it's time for another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock, joined as I am every single week, almost every single day, by Wei Ting, who is sporting his Gatorade today.
I'm drinking Gatorade today, yeah. It's something different, and it's refreshing and delicious.
I was never a fan of Gatorade as a child, because I was told... I was told fake facts by friends about what went into Gatorade, and it always turned me off of it.
What were you told?
I'm not going to tell you, because then you'll have that visual.
I don't care.
My friends used to always tell me that with Gatorade, one of the secret ingredients was that they would take human sweat and put it into each Gatorade, and that is what would give you energy. And I said, that's disgusting. But I always had that visual stuck in my head.
You believed it.
I did believe it as a child. And I just couldn't get over that mental block. So me and Gatorade never got along. Powerade, I assumed it was probably similar.
So you're under the belief that sweat would give a person energy?
Listen, I did not give much credence to whether this was true or not, but that was mentally in my head now. So anytime I would go to have Gatorade, I think of that. So it's ruined for me.
Okay. It does maybe taste like sweat. I don't know.
Sweat has, like, a saltier discharge to it.
Right, okay. I don't know. It's just a nice, refreshing drink. Electrolytes.
Were you excited to watch The King of the Ring, 1999? The last year the Big Show was effective, though not on this show.
I can't say I really was.
You picked it, technically.
Did I?
I gave you an option of picking one, two, or three, and you picked one, and that was this one.
Okay. No, were you, John?
No, not really, but I thought of I can't even remember what those three picks were, but this, I guess, was number one. I don't know why I picked this event. I've never watched it since it aired back in June of 1999. Yep. I will never watch it again after this.
Yeah, probably not.
It's funny, because we're coming off this past Sunday where No Way Out was a glorified SmackDown. And this, at the time, to me, was like a glorified Raw.
Absolutely.
Maybe not even glorified, because some of the matches here were so short, they were barely even considered TV matches, in my opinion.
I had the same thought watching this, because, this was back during the King of the Ring, where they actually included the quarterfinals as well as the semi.
Yeah, they had gotten away from that for quite a few years, where they just did the final four. But this year, they put... We got three matches out of two individuals.
So there are a total of 10 matches on this card, and I suppose that's more than what we typically get for a three-hour pay-per-view, and thus a lot of these matches were very brief.
All of the matches, though, with the exception of that Hardy's Edge and Christian match, though, were announced ahead of time, which is more than I can say for No Way Out this past Sunday, where I think half the card was all put together at the last minute. Mm. Well, June of 1999... I remember watching the movie Big Daddy on this same day and going home that night to watch King of the Ring.
Wow.
What a memory.
What a life.
And here we are, years and years later, and had I wanted to fully relive this nostalgia, I could have gone and watched That's My Boy with Adam Sandler.
Hmm.
And then watched King of the Ring again.
How is that? Have you seen it?
I will That's not be. Boy? No, I'm not going to see that.
That looks good.
It looks terrible.
No, no.
You're just arguing.
It looks like an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, that's a terrible movie by today's standards. Adam Sandler, what was the last movie you enjoyed from that guy? It was that remote movie, the remote control
Click.
Movie. Click.
I never saw that.
That movie was way better than it had any right to be.
I thought Big Daddy was awesome.
That was in 1999.
Okay. What else has he been in since?
Little Nicky was that after?
I like that too.
Yeah. You have poor taste. Growing ups.
Fuck, I love Adam Sandler. Like, Billy Madison is it, or Happy Gilmore. Like, those are still some of my favorite movies. Let me look up Adam Sandler. I'm very curious.
I interviewed Adam Sandler once.
Did you?
For that Grown Ups movie.
Oh, yeah.
They brought me all the way down to Los Angeles to talk to Adam Sandler. And he got... I remember bringing up... Because Kevin James was on the panel there as well. I was interviewing the four of them. And I asked Kevin James about the fact that, you know, the A-Team just came out a few weeks ago starring Quentin Jackson. Does that mean you guys and Quentin Jackson are at war here with your movies going head-to-head? And Chris Rock was just kind of like, we're not really like head-to-head. And Adam Sandler looked concerned. He was like, let's just move on. Let's move on to the we don't have any problems with Quentin Jackson. It's like, dude.
They take that stuff seriously.
I guess they do. Kevin James was awesome, though. He, like, hung around after the interview. They were just, like, slotting us one by one. But afterwards, Kevin James was like, hey, man, so what do you think about Rashad Evans' next fight and stuff? So we ended up chatting about fights and stuff. I was like, I wish I just got to interview you for the whole 10 minutes.
Well, that's cool.
It wasn't even that long. They're so quick. They bring you down for a movie premiere. And you get to – they put me up in a hotel. They took me to watch the movie. And then the next day, I got a grand total of – 3 minutes with the women, and then I got 3 minutes with the guys.
Mm.
And they took me out to this crazy, like, private club where it's just all catered. You're sitting around doing nothing. And then they put me up for a second night at this hotel because they thought it'd be too tight doing the interview and then getting me to the airport.
Wow.
As I'm on the beach. And I was all by myself here.
Yeah.
I had no one to hang out with.
No, the beach is fun.
I didn't go swimming. I walked on the pier.
Well, here's what we got. Last year, he released Jack and Jill, which...
That got the Razzie, didn't it?
It got a bunch of Razzies. producer, writer, Kids' Choice Award.
How did Katie Holmes do that movie?
What? I don't know. I never saw it. Lucky Larson, Born to Be a Star.
That was one of... I heard that was one of the worst movies ever. It's got our good... our fan. Well, we're fans of his. I was going to say good friend. We don't know him. Joey Diaz was in that movie.
Oh, okay. Zookeeper, Just Go With It, also nominated
Zookeeper with Joe Rogan. So
right.
There's a thread here.
Also nominated for Razzies. Then we have Grown Ups, of course.
Grown Ups was not Razzie material. It wasn't horror.
No, that was not nominated. What about Funny People? Did you watch that?
Oh, Funny People. That was a serious movie.
Yeah, that
was good. It went too long, but It was good. It was like over 2 hours.
Then there's Bedtime Stories, which I've never
no
even
clue
heard
what
of.
That is.
You Don't Mess with the Zohan, which I actually saw.
Oh, that's terrible. That was a Razzie winner.
It was awful.
Don't mess with the Zohan.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry. I didn't see that.
That was a movie with they were too late to the irony on that one about two homosexual men.
Then we got Click, then we got The Longest Yard.
Click was really good.
Spanglish, did you watch that?
I didn't see Spanglish, but I heard good things.
51st States, did you see that one?
That sucked.
Yeah, I saw that one too. It was very depressing.
That was with Drew Barrymore, right?
Yeah. Pauly Shore,
terrible.
Anger Management.
That was with Jack Nicholson, right?
The Hot Chick.
Hot Chick was another Rob Schneider shitty movie.
Executive producer. 8 Crazy Nights.
That was the Christmas movie.
Yeah.
We're all the way back. That was 2002 that came out.
This is 2002. Well, then we're at Punch Drunk Love, which I thought was decent.
Punch Drunk Love. What was that one?
That was another serious movie.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Mr. Deeds.
That sucked.
And then we're back to the little
Mr.
Nicky.
Deeds is the one where he inherits that money and he's got some like burnt foot or something.
All right, so of the past decade, you enjoyed Funny People.
Hey, he makes a shitload of money, so it's hard. It's just he puts out crap that I don't want to see, so I'm allowed to bitch about it.
Yes. All right.
Let's chat about the King of the Ring. An Adam Sandler level pay per view. From Greensboro, North Carolina, way the home of you know, the NWA Starrcade for many years. This was the first time the WWF returned to Greensboro, I think, since this was the first time Greensboro could draw as a wrestling city since the NWA took Starrcade away from Greensboro in 1987 and went to Chicago with it. And Greensboro never forgave wrestling for taking away that big event. And it probably was a mistake in hindsight. The video starts off. It's all based around Linda and Stephanie naming Steve Austin as the new CEO of the company. How many years later and we're doing the exact same main event storyline?
I know.
Austin is the CEO of the company 13 years ago.
That's the thing about the past decade in pro wrestling. It's just
the key story is the exact same with just moving parts.
Well, at this time in 1999, it was probably a very novel concept, but it just seems like for the past decade, we've just been trying to reclaim those glory years.
This has to have been a video from David Sahadi. This has become like one of his trademarks now, is that he goes to like major political figures with their speeches and inserts them. We had Jesse Jackson, JFK, Richard Nixon, all used in contrast to Steve Austin running the WWF. And tonight there would be a ladder match for control of the company with Vincent Shane against Steve Austin. And we had a presenting sponsor, Super Soaker.
Super Soaker.
Super Soaker.
Yep.
I was hoping someone would have a Super Soaker gun on this show.
Oh, too bad.
Didn't get any product placement. But we did have the blimp. The Super Soaker blimp throughout the Greensboro Coliseum was present as Jim Ross announced 20,108 fans here at the Greensboro Coliseum. And we've Ross Lawler calling the show, and there is late breaking news. Back at this point, they used to do a one-hour Sunday Night Heat prior to these pay-per-views, and this is when Sunday Night Heat actually did well, very well. This was before SmackDown was around. Yep. Sunday Night Heat was the number two show, and it would either shoot angles leading into the pay-per-view, or they would shoot angles to set up Raw the next night. And this was a big hit for when it debuted in like mid-98 and was effective for like a year and a half. And then it didn't. But on Sunday Night Heat, Shawn Michaels forced Shane McMahon to face Ken Shamrock in a match on the pre-show, and it led to Steve Blackman attacking Ken Shamrock with a kendo stick, giving Ken Shamrock internal bleeding, and somewhere during this 48-second match, Shane McMahon got injured, and his status for the main event was put into question. And they showed Shamrock in the back yelling at the EMTs, going crazy. I think that was his instruction here. Act crazy.
So what was happening in the storylines with the corporation or the corporate ministry at this time?
Yeah, it was really confusing at this point because we had the corporation and then they introduced the Ministry of Darkness, which was the Undertaker's group. And the Undertaker was performing all these satanic rituals and going after Stephanie. But then they did that angle with someone being the higher power working with the Undertaker. And then the higher power turned out to be Vince McMahon, the same man that Undertaker was torturing. It's supposed to make sense. And then they merged to form the corporate ministry. And Stephanie was pissed that she was used as a pawn here in this game to the storyline was that the corporate ministry was working together to get the title away from Austin. And it and they worked. That worked for them. But as a result here, this put them all together. Ken Shamrock was somehow ousted here, and they briefly formed a group called The Union.
Right.
With Big Show, Mick Foley, and Test. The only union ever formed in professional wrestling.
And what a union it was.
It fell apart. Yeah. Just like a legit union would in wrestling.
And what about Hunter and Chyna? Were they part of the corporation at this time?
Yes. I believe they were. They joined because they turned... they were heels here after DX and were a part of the corporate ministry.
But they were
having problems with The Undertaker, as we saw on this show.
Right. But they were not a part of DX.
Yes.
Okay.
This was a tough time to follow.
They were doing a lot.
This was Russo in WWF. Michael Cole is in the back teasing that Shane may not be able to compete tonight. And we go to our first of four King of the Ring quarterfinal matchups with Hardcore Holly taking on X-Pac. And Ross puts over X-Pac having a tough match the night before at Madison Square Garden at a house show. A house show, eh? What are those?
A show at somebody's house? I don't know.
And promoting it on your television? This was crazy. Holly hits a powerbomb to X-Pac, and then X-Pac comes back with a spinning heel kick, kicks Holly in the ribs, sets up the Bronco Buster and hits it. So what does Hardcore Holly do? He goes to the floor, grabs a chair, and hits X-Pac as he gets his hands up. Disqualification at 3 minutes, and X-Pac advances by DQ. What a hot start to this pay-per-view.
Yeah, a real nothing segment. I suppose they really wanted to protect...
A segment, that's what this was. It wasn't even a match.
No, it was not a match. It really felt like a TV show because the match barely got started before we got the DQ, and it really seemed like they wanted to push Hardcore Holly at this time. The new Hardcore Holly.
Yeah.
And X-Pac, man, he was over.
Yes, he was. And there was a post-match attack where Holly hit a spinning neckbreaker to X-Pac, and Road Dogg eventually made the save, but Holly escaped. So Holly eliminates himself from the tournament. Then we go to the back, and we had the most awkward interview I've seen in quite some time. Terry Taylor, the Red Rooster, interviews Hardcore Holly, and Holly asks, "Who the hell are you?" And Holly calls himself the Big Shot. And he did this awkward, like, giggling in between all of his words and says he hasn't forgotten about the Big Show either. And I was confused. What does he mean? Mm-hmm. But then they followed it up by showing us an angle from Raw the prior Monday where Big Show and Hardcore Holly fought out to the back of an arena and Holly got knocked down onto a cement area. Big Show climbed onto a ledge, which just happened to be occupied by a car. And the Big Show tipped this car off of the ledge, apparently falling onto Hardcore Holly. But Jim Ross told us that the car narrowly missed Hardcore Holly.
It really didn't look impressive at all, just because it was so ridiculous. And you can't even see him getting crushed, so obviously.
So nothing. If you had watched this on Raw... That's your last visual. You would have assumed Hardcore Holly was dead. Right. And instead, he comes out fine for his match. There was no mention of this before the match. Not even a scratch on this guy.
Well, they would do these big, big angles, and it would be lead to absolutely nothing afterwards. So
So X-Pac advances. Then we go to our next quarterfinal match. A 1999 match between the Big Show and Kane.
Two
men that have lasted the test of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And boy, what a match this was. Big Show, during this time in 99, was working in trunks.
Oh, boy. Rocking the braided ponytail.
Oof. Horrible.
Yeah.
Man, what can we say about this? Jim Ross says that, as far as the internet is concerned, Big Show is one of the favorites. And Lawler says... You mean on WWE.com, right? And Ross says, what else would I be talking about? What a slam.
What other websites would there be?
There would have been Scoops. Wrestling.
There would have been LiveAudioWrestling.com.
There would have been LiveAudioWrestling at that time. OneWrestling.com was around. Slam Wrestling was around.
Right. They're all around.
There were only a handful, though. I'm trying to remember what websites I went to at that point, and those were about it. Ross makes the comparison of Big Show to Andre the Giant. We saw Kane hit an enziguri. Both went for a big boot at the same time and missed. This looked horrendous as they just fell over. Two big giants stumbling over, giving in to gravity. And Kane went to the floor, hit a top rope clothesline. Then Big Show goes for a mule kick. He misses Kane, and he hits our good pal Jimmy Corderas, who proceeded to sell for the next year. Jimmy was out.
Yep.
Out like a light. And Kane hits a low blow. Hardcore Holly is back with his chair. But Kane stops him and chokeslams Holly. And then Show gets the advantage. Kane ducks a clothesline. And then grabs Big Show by the throat with the death grip. But the only people losing consciousness were the audience. Clearly, this was just stalling, and for 3 minutes, he held this grip on Big Show's neck as we got extreme close-up of Big Show's perspiration. This guy could have filled a carton of Gatorades.
What it looked like was just Big Show was sitting down, and Kane, standing up, just put his hand on the Big Show's throat.
Oh.
It just looked like the laziest rest spot you've ever seen.
I don't know if they were waiting for Jimmy to get up or they were waiting for something. It was terrible.
The crowd begins to boo this rest spot.
This was horrible. Kane eventually grabs a chair and hits Big Show with the chair. Corderas comes up, and Kane covers him for the finish at 6 minutes and 37 seconds. And Jim Ross was just raving about how impressive this chair shot was. The best chair shot we've ever seen Kane deliver. This match was horrendous. I would say the worst match on the show, and that is high praise for this show. This was terrible.
Yeah, a very slow match, as you would expect. Worse than you would expect, actually.
And remember that this was when Big Show had just come into the company, and at that time, they had huge expectations for this guy. And this was only... He had debuted in February. This was June, and he was losing like this. Like, they had really lost faith in him already here.
Well, yeah.
So, my goodness.
The pacing was really odd with that rest spot right before the finish, so perhaps something fucked up, or maybe he just gassed.
This match is just the worst. Cole was in the back with Vince McMahon, and Vince says, "I'll never forgive Ken Shamrock for hurting my son Shane." He says Shane's hurt, he's going to the hospital, and Shane cannot compete tonight. So they were teasing Vince and Austin would have a singles match. Then we go to our next quarterfinal match. It's the Ass Man, Billy Gunn, taking on Ken Shamrock. I remember watching Billy Gunn at this time, and it didn't hit me as much as it does in my later years of just how silly this gimmick was. His gimmick was he loved asses.
Mr. Ass.
Mr. Ass.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about this one. He had this new theme song, Way, which was has gone on to become a legendary theme in pro wrestling circles.
Yeah. I'm an ass man.
I'm an ass man.
Oh, it's great.
I want to pull up the lyrics here.
Okay.
Because this is a song that I think it's a catchy one, but one that people don't always... All right. I'm an ass man. Yeah, I'm an ass man. I love to love 'em. I love to kick 'em. I love to shove 'em. I love to stick 'em. Love to flaunt 'em. I love to watch 'em. I love to pick 'em. And I'm gonna kick 'em. 'Cause I'm an ass man. Yeah, I'm an ass man. Yes, I'm an ass man. Oh, I'm an ass man. So many asses, so little time. Only a tight one can stop me on the dime. I'm a lover of every kind. The best surprises always sneak up from behind.
Brilliant.
This, poetry. I am 1,000% certain that someone did this exact same thing, Googled these lyrics, and came up with the Billy and Chuck gimmick.
Very possible.
Buns of glory, buns of steel. Your lies won't give away the truth of how I feel. You walk behind me, I feel the heat. That's why the girls don't walk behind me down the street.
Oh, boy.
This is a theme song of all theme songs.
That's great. That's a great song. Well,
wait, you're not inspired by this show at all. I'm really sorry I picked this one.
No. I just
these are the shows people love, though.
You don't have to be sorry. Why do you have to be sorry? It's not your fault.
How many sittings did it take for you to watch this?
It took me one.
One?
Yeah.
I did. I watched it in two, actually. It did go by quick.
Yeah, it did. It did. It just like...
This was a product for ADD.
I suppose it's just one of those shows where like I sit down and I watch it, but I just have nothing really... I don't know. It's just like nothing really to say. It's just another show that kind of passes along. Like after weeks and weeks of doing these, they just kind of all blurred together.
Well, Billy Gunn and Ken Shamrock, was this a match that stood out for you?
No.
Before that, actually, they're in the back. Billy Gunn did a promo. This was our first of many promos revolving around balls. And Gunn says that Shamrock is just scared. He's not hurt at all. And tells him to grow some balls or just forfeit the match. And says that Mr. Ass is going over the world's most dangerous horse's ass.
Now, how is somebody calling else an ass supposed to be an insult when you call yourself
Mr. Ass? I'm the ass man. Whatever you are, I shadow you in assness.
Was Ken Shamrock the winner from last year of the King of the Ring?
Yes, he was, actually. He was. He had won the King of the Ring the year prior. Right. And Billy Gunn comes out and Shamrock snaps in the back and he goes crazy before he comes out. And Gunn attacks him with a drop kick to the abdomen, stomped him in the corner. And Shamrock recovered briefly, grabs an ankle, but Gunn escapes right away. This was right out of like an MMA fight, avoiding a heel hook.
Popped his legs up.
And he continues to attack the ribs, just working over his midsection. Gunn misses a top rope splash. Shamrock then runs into a spine buster, and Shamrock is bleeding from the mouth, and referee Teddy Long calls for the stoppage finish at 3 minutes and 37 seconds. A marathon.
Yeah. Yet to have one clean result thus far in this tournament.
No, we should keep track here.
One DQ, one chair shot, and another with a pre-match attack.
And Shamrock tosses Teddy out of the ring after the match, and Billy Gunn advances. So they told the internal bleeding story here. It was weird. It's like you want to put Billy Gunn over, but we don't want to hurt Ken Shamrock. And what a great final product we got here. 3:37. Kevin Kelly, the voice of Ring of Honor, is with Triple H in China. And China says that she wanted to be a princess as a kid, but now she wants to be a queen. And now she wants to be a porn queen.
Oh, yes.
Says that Road Dogg has big brass balls to challenge her. And Triple H has challenged the winner of the WWF title match tonight, and he doesn't take orders from anyone. He marches to the beat of himself.
Hey, so at what point did DX join the corporation? Didn't they?
That was later, months down the road. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Not at this point. They were fractured. What? We need a graph.
Oh.
The DX lineage.
It's just, why do we put so much effort into storylines that require so little care to create?
Wait, I think you went into this show wanting to hate this show.
Maybe I did. Maybe it was a bit too long.
Oh, blasphemy. So then, this is amazing. We get like all the guys doing like 3-minute matches, and then Road Dogg and China get like 15 here. Road Dogg does his usual pre-match promo. Triple H is in the corner of China. Jim Ross calls China a jacked-up Jezebel. What was he trying to say? Why don't you come out and just say it, Jim Ross?
What are
you accusing China of? A jacked-up Jezebel. Road Dogg takes a forearm to the face and then a second one. Road Dogg here had to sell all of her offense. Ross referred to China's offense as stiff and sudden in reference to the forearms, which appeared to be just laid right into Road Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
Road Dogg comes back with an Irish whip that sends China over to the floor. Ric Flair, this was not. Crowd popped as Triple H got on the apron. And Hunter distracted Road Dogg. China shoves him into the post. And then Hunter attacks him and tosses him into the steps. China gets the heat. Road Dogg finally fights back. And China hits a DDT. She does the shake, rattle, and knee drop to mock him. She just looked so awkward in here. China applied a sleeper hold. Road Dogg fights out. Then Hunter grabs a chain and uses it on Road Dogg as the referee is out. And he puts China on top, but Road Dogg kicks out at 2 for a pop. And then Shawn Michaels, who's the commissioner at this time, comes down to a huge reaction wearing his Texas Wrestling Academy shirt, where it read on the back, 1-900-32 train.
Do you ever call that?
I didn't, Way. But Brian Danielson did.
Yeah, Spanky.
Brian
as well.
Kendrick did. And Frankie Kazarian did.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't around long, but quite the history there.
Oh, yeah. Who else? Who else was from that school?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
One of the... Garrison? Garrison Cade?
Garrison Cade went through there. Yeah, they had a lot of guys there. Road Dogg makes his comeback. Shawn Michaels comes down and basically takes Hunter away to the back. So it's just Road Dogg and China. China comes up from behind on Road Dogg and gives him a low blow. Road Dogg no-sells it, and he pulls out a steel cup he's wearing and hits a pump handle slam to pin China. 13 minutes and 22 seconds.
Oh, man.
Wow.
The finish actually got a very good reaction. I thought the middle cup was pretty clever, but the majority of this match was just very boring and completely overbooked. As were, by the way, another non-clean finish in our tournament. China is just very limited by her repertoire. Just a lot of forearms and elbows and knees, and most of this match was really Road Dog trying to bump for her. But another very slow match. Another not good.
In fairness, China being the first woman in this King of the Ring tournament was like the only storyline they had going into this tournament. Like, there was really nothing here. What? Ken Shamrock repeating? I mean, that was kind of...
Well, Billy Gunn and feuding with X-Pac. That's awesome. A storyline.
Yeah, it was captivating. Michael Cole's with The Rock.
Hold on a second. So what was up with Billy Gunn at this time?
He had turned heel.
And he had left DX?
He had left DX. So DX at this time was like Road Dogg and X-Pac.
Yeah.
That was it. I don't know. And then they'd have a feud for ownership of DX after this pay-per-view.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Michael Cole's with The Rock in the locker room. And Michael Cole asks him, are you going to win the WWF title tonight? Rock said, no, I'm not. The match is over. Stupid. Rock just cut a promo. He talked about The Undertaker speaking in tongues, so then he mocked him doing it himself. Mm. A very short Rock promo. And they announced that they've added a match to the show, Edge and Christian, a young Edge and Christian, accompanied by Gangrel, taking on the Hardy Boys, the Hot Topic Boys, with Michael Hayes in nightclub attire per 1999 standards. He had, like, the tight shirt, the, like, green jean pants.
He had the tight shirt with the giant gut sticking out.
Oh, he was
like, this is Michael Hayes shopping at Hot Topic.
This is something else. I've always enjoyed Michael Hayes and his fashion. This is a number one contenders match for I was confused here because they explained that the Acolytes were the tag team champions, but earlier in the night Billy Gunn was walking around wearing one of the tag titles.
Right.
And they like, he stole it, but I was like, why? What's this leading to? He doesn't have a partner. He has no connection. Why wouldn't he steal a singles title? Or, I don't know.
Wasn't he a heel? Weren't they all heels with the Acolytes?
Yeah. Yeah, the Acolytes were heels.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
I was just confused here because I saw Billy Gunn walking around all night with the tag titles, and I was like, he's not a tag champion. So that's what was going on, folks. The Hardy sprint to the ring to start. Jeff Hardy was all of 21 at this time.
Really?
21. Wow. Christian hits a gut buster to Matt off of his shoulders. And the Hardys hit the Poetry in Motion, which at this point was simply described as very unique offense.
Mm-hmm.
And Edge gets the hot tag, clotheslines both. Hayes runs in here and attacks Edge from behind. And then Michael Hayes takes a spear after getting thrown over the top rope. Then Jeff goes for the Poetry in Motion again, but Edge hits a spear off the ropes, which did get a pretty big reaction here, mm-hmm. and a two count. Christian then hits a flying cross body to Matt Hardy on the floor, and then Gangrel grabs the blood from his chalice, and he goes to spray the blood into Jeff's face. Jeff ducks, and it hits Edge, and then Jeff hits the Twist of Fate and pins Edge 4 minutes and 51 seconds, and Gangrel apologizes. They all make up after. Hardys get the win here. So, not a lot of time here, but this was the first, I don't want to say great match or even really good match, but this is the first decent match on the show, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
It didn't have much time. This was a TV match.
And, of course, this was way before, months before their Terry Invitational Tournament feud and that whole era.
The tit
tournament, and these two teams, they would go on to do a lot more. Here at this point, they showed some spark, but nowhere near what they would eventually become.
And then Michael Cole is with the Undertaker in the back, and he asks if the Undertaker can withstand the charge of the Brahma Bull. The Undertaker says no.
And
these are terrible questions. I hate these questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Taker asks, what happens when you rip the balls off of a bull?
Just like completely, what does that have to do with anything?
I enjoyed this Undertaker character at the time, the gothic Undertaker, but watching it back, I was like, what a...
Cheesy.
What a period piece this was.
What happens when you rip the balls off a bull? Very sophisticated writing.
Yeah.
You're right. Every promo thus far has to deal with
balls.
Balls.
Balls or ass at this time. That's what every promo was.
Yep.
King of the Ring semifinal time. Oh, sorry. First, Vince McMahon comes out. He says that the main event will not take place tonight because Shane cannot compete. Then Shawn Michaels comes out and said that the match is on and Vince will have a suitable replacement of his choosing. Then we go to the semifinal, Billy Gunn against Kane.
Oh, this is going to be a clinic.
This used to be the joke. It used to be these were the only two men who couldn't have a good match with Chris Benoit.
Yes.
Meeting in singles action.
This is a dream match.
It
only
is.
On pay-per-view.
Kane attacks him in the corner, and they go to the floor, and he throws Gunn into the steel steps, lifts the steps, but then Billy Gunn drop kicks the steps into Kane. This is probably the most athletic thing Billy Gunn did all night. And drops Kane, sends Kane face first into the post. They continue to fight in the aisle, finally return to the ring, and Kane drop kicks Billy Gunn off the apron to the floor. And Billy Gunn gets a chair, another chair, as Big Show returns. He comes down, he grabs the chair from Billy Gunn and shoves Gunn. Then Big Show swings the chair, Billy Gunn gets out of the way, and Big Show chair shots Kane in the head. And Billy Gunn pins Kane 5 minutes and 27 seconds. Another clean finish for you, Wei. Fuck, this tournament is the most unimpressive tournament I've ever watched. That's not true. I saw the WCW title tournament later in 99, booked by the same man.
Oh, boy. This was just not a very good show by this point. All these matches were completely meaningless. Shit.
Kevin Kelly is with X-Pac. Selling his injuries from the first match and selling his neck, and says he has mixed feelings going into the ring with his friend the Road Dog, but he says, let the best man win, or I'll rip his testicles off.
The first promo not to have to do with testicles. He calls him Brian James at one point.
Oh, he was shooting.
And he corrects himself and calls him Jesse. Then Road Dog comes back, and what does he say?
Road Dogg comes in and says this might be the toughest match he's ever had and calls him X-Pac and then corrects himself with the pronunciation. It's X-Pac. We're sorry.
I don't know why he needed to correct himself. But
no one would have cared here at all.
X-Pac.
Two-Pac.
That's acceptable. People say that.
I've been reading this book, Notorious COP,
mm-hmm.
on the whole, a bunch of different rap beefs and the Tupac
cops.
Murder, the Biggie murder, the Jam Master Jay murder. My God. I didn't fully, I've always just heard kind of from you secondhand just the level of beef that Jay-Z and Nas had. What a program.
Oh, yeah.
These two had
a money drawing program.
It was like, man. First they were friends, then it just started off with a vague comment, and then it escalated where they showed Nas in a tutu or something at some
they showed somebody else from
it was someone from Junior Mafia, right?
Mobb Deep.
Yeah, that's right.
One of Nas's associates.
And then they wanted to show they wanted to hang an effigy of Jay-Z and they wouldn't allow it, and then it just escalated and escalated.
It got pretty ugly at one point with this woman that I guess Nas had a kid with, and Jay-Z ended up this woman would get around, and so Jay-Z ended up sleeping with her too, and so one of Jay-Z's...
Did he rap about condom rappers or something?
Yeah, one of Jay-Z's raps, that the freestyle that came after Ether was about, there's a line about how he left his condom on his baby seat or something.
Oh,
yeah, it was just, and everybody just saw that and was like, that's too far, you know?
It's weird that I'm reading this book now. I've had the book for over a year and I'm just now reading it. And it's with all the Drake and Chris Brown stuff now, it's they're beefing up security and they're fearing that this is going to result in gunfire.
Oh, really? Yeah, maybe.
This beef hasn't caught your interest, I guess.
I don't know. I haven't really been paying attention. The ECW chants were
interesting. The ECW chants were awesome.
Yeah, I haven't really paid attention to that.
All right, the show continues here. We go to X-Pac and Road Dogg, our second semifinal, winner taking on Billy Gunn. And they go back and forth. X-Pac gets the advantage, misses Road Dogg with a Bronco Buster in the corner. If you were wrestling your best friend, like, the Bronco Buster is not a move that hurts. It's more just like a, yeah, smell my balls. Would you be doing that move? Psychology-wise, what a that did not fit in this match.
Well, it could help him win. It could take down the.
What does the Bronco Buster do?
I'm sitting on your chest. Well, it'll take away the focus of the opponent.
All right.
It'll take away his confidence.
Well, Road Dogg went for the pump handle slam.
It'll make him question his sexuality.
Yes, maybe.
Confusing.
From a man who used to deliver a pump handle slam where he would pretend to fuck the guy in the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Pac countered the pump handle slam, hit the X Factor. Two best friends had a 3-minute and 9-second match, and X-Pac wins here. You would think that the natural match to go to was Billy Gunn and Road Dogg.
Yeah.
Though they just had a pay-per-view match the month prior.
Oh,
but
okay.
That, to me, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn is, you know, you beat your tag partner as you're ascending to the singles ring.
Right,
I don't
care
about Billy Gunn and X-Pac.
That would have been certainly better to save that match for the King of the Ring finals instead of...
yeah, they gave it away the month prior, which was the Over the Edge pay-per-view, which I don't think was a pay-per-view anyone really considered counting for anything.
But like you said, John, all these matches just feel like way too short and better suited for Raw. You know?
It was just... I almost... You know, the Attitude Era, this was a time when business was through the roof here, but... Your roster was thin at this point. I'm not saying I would have necessarily wanted to see Big Show and Kane go 15 minutes.
You mean thin in terms of work rate?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not in terms of characters.
Yeah.
Characters, they were very rich at this time.
Well, at this time, it was before the Radicals came in and before Jericho even, Kurt Angle, your whole influx of work
Albert.
Rate. Yeah.
We got a video package for the WWF title match. And, man, this was just profiling how The Rock got this title match. First, he had to beat The Undertaker and Hunter in a triple threat match, which he got after Taker attacks Hunter. Ross notes that The Rock is 27 years old. He was 27 here.
It's amazing.
In 99.
Yeah.
Meaning by 30 years old, he was pretty much done.
Yeah.
And look at the roster right now, dude. Dolph Ziggler's 32.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sheamus is 34.
Yeah,
it's just amazing here. I know Rock is like a freak here, but it's just they certainly
they've waited too long for.
I think that's a major. They wait so long to get behind these guys that when they finally do, you've limited their drawing years.
How long has Dolph Ziggler been with the company?
Dolph has been there. So, I mean, Jesus Christ, he debuted as
The
Spirit Squad was 2006. The Caddy was before that, 2005.
Yeah.
So he's been in their system since probably 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing and then once you've watched, like, a guy like Ziggler, if they were to put the title on him, I mean, is this guy going to turn this company around? I don't feel it because they've put him in the spot. I've watched this guy in the same spot for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, The Undertaker and The Rock for the WWF title. The Undertaker attacks the referee from behind before the match even starts. And Rock then hits a rock bottom and gets a visionary fall on The Undertaker. Then another ref runs in before this match has even started. And Paul Bearer yanks him out. The Undertaker comes back with a choke slam. But Rock kicks out, so I assume the match has begun. They fight up the aisle. Rock sends him into a steel barricade. They fight back near the ring with Taker on offense. Rock would crotch The Undertaker on the top rope for when he was going for the old school, which I think was just a regular school at this point. He spits water in his face. They go on the floor. Taker hits Rock with a ring bell into a chair and knocks Rock down into the ring. Rock starts his comeback but then takes a DDT. Taker gets a 2 count. Rock then cuts him off with a Samoan drop. The crowd was definitely behind Rock here. When he would go on offense, I mean, the crowd was really into him here. He had just turned babyface after WrestleMania. He was really fresh as a face.
Mm-hmm.
The Undertaker would Irish whip Rock into a referee. Yet another ref bump here. Then Rock hits the people's elbow, another visionary fall. And then Paul Bearer grabs a cloth, which has, ironically enough, ether on it. Ether.
You gotta love the Attitude Era.
Yep. And they use the ether but on the Rock, but Rock stops him, and then Rock uses the ether on Undertaker. Then Triple H runs in, hits a pedigree to the Rock, Both men are out. Taker stumbles, and his hand lands on The Rock for a near fall. The Undertaker then hits the tombstone and pins The Rock for the win. Jim Ross puts over how Rock had the match won on three different occasions. Crowd was hot for different parts of this match, but a very heavy booked match.
At the time, yes, the crowd certainly seemed into it, but I mean, 13 years later, in terms of replay value, these are ridiculous to watch. It does nothing for me. The match itself, it actually ended up being a pretty decent match until the ridiculous Ether overbooking and Hunter coming in to interfere again. I feel like everybody involved here, Rock, Taker, Triple H even, they would go on to have much better matches.
They announced that if you send in your cable bill, you will get a free WWF CD travel case. Real dated item.
Oh, man.
CD travel case.
Think of all this trash that they get made with their logo on it. Like, all from China. There's got to be some warehouse somewhere just of, like, the worst merchandise. Like, we used to get a lot of stuff from the law with the...
They'd always send those hilarious stuff. It's just like they make this,
like a pencil case or like a
They had like back to school like items and stuff. Yeah, someone sent their cable bill for this thing.
No, a lot of people did. I'm sure.
Shawn Michaels has Triple H thrown out of the building following his interference in the title match, and Vince is fuming because that was going to be his tag partner. And Shawn says, "No shit, Sherlock." No shit, Sherlock. And Vince then gets on his phone and he tells someone to come back. So, at least this made sense. This was a show-long storyline that at least it made sense here. Hunter interfered and he's been thrown out of the building after he was given one warning earlier in the night by Michaels. So I had no problem with that. Michael Cole's with Billy Gunn, who says he is going after X-Pac's neck and he will have four words when he wins. Kiss my royal ass.
That's four words, yeah. This was to be his Austin 316 promo.
Yep. Kiss my royal ass.
He didn't get a promo afterwards, so yeah, this would have been it. He showed he showed a lot of confidence when he was talking here. Like, he felt like he was getting that next spot to be the top guy.
He did those yelling promos.
Right. Well, that's confidence. You yell.
Yeah, that's like a stroke. That's what he was having. X-Pac against Billy Gunn, your King of the Ring final.
Mm-hmm.
And Gunn attacks him from behind right when the bell is rung. And Gunn misses a splash in the corner and gets clotheslined to the floor. And then X-Pac hits a plancha. They go back in the ring and Gunn comes back with a bulldog, a military press. Gunn gets a near fall and he yells bullshit at Tim White. Turns around into an X-Factor, but X-Pac can only get a two count here. So what does X-Pac resort to in the repertoire? Can't get him with the X-Factor. It's time for the Bronco Buster. And Gunn is able to stop... he takes the Bronco Buster, but then Gunn comes back with a reverse neck breaker. X-Pac drop kicks Gunn on a turnbuckle, but Gunn then punches him off and hits his fame-asser off the second rope. Gets the win 5 minutes and 34 seconds and is anointed King Ass.
Yes, that's right. The crowd seemed very tired for this. Like, they weren't really into it. Perhaps they just didn't care to see either person win the King of the Ring.
We got 14 minutes and 38 seconds of Mr. Ass on this evening.
That was a lot of Mr. Ass, and they certainly saw something in him. They thought he would be the next guy.
They were wrong.
They were absolutely wrong. To close this, no coronation, no crown, nothing. He just wins, takes his tag team belt that we don't know who he co-holds it with, and just walks away.
And this, you know, typically the King of the Ring, it would always build up to the guy getting something big at SummerSlam. And for Billy Gunn, what he would get would be on the losing end of a Kiss My Ass match with The Rock, where his face was shoved into an overweight woman's ass.
At what point, wow, at what point did you feel that they lost their confidence in Billy Gunn as a next guy?
I don't know, because I remember as a fan watching this where it's like, yeah, Billy Gunn's got a decent look, but he never struck me as being the top guy. What really did him in was the fact that they wanted him to work a big program with Austin, and Austin nixed it, just saying, I just don't see it in Billy Gunn. I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of really hurt Billy Gunn, and they were like, well, Austin's our guy, and he's not going to work with Billy Gunn, so you can work with Rock, and they just never wanted to go all the way with Billy Gunn, and I can't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a support character at best. And then we go to the main event, and we get a video dating back to Austin winning the WWF title at that year's WrestleMania, then to the Higher Power angle with Vince revealing himself as the Higher Power, the unholy wedding with Stephanie, where Stephanie gets swerved by Vincent Shane, and it led to Linda stepping down as CEO and appointing Steve Austin as her replacement, and then leading to a ladder match for control of the WWF and no corporate interference allowed in the match.
Well, of course. How else do you settle a business dispute?
Climbing.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon comes out and introduces his partner, the Lethal Weapon Steve Blackman.
Wow.
This went over well.
Steve Blackman in the main event of the pay-per-view.
I had no recollection of this at all watching it. But then, a long-forgotten segment, GTV, comes on. And for those not watching, this was like this spy camera that would just ever so often just come on at the right time and get something caught on camera that would have storyline implications. And here, it was live in Shane McMahon's locker room where he's watching alongside the Mean Street Posse, and they're all laughing that they got one over on Shawn Michaels. And then they realize that they're watching themselves live on pay-per-view. And they try to leave the arena, but Shawn Michaels sends Shane to the ring. He comes out, and Steve Blackman is sent to the back and says if he doesn't, he will disqualify Vince right now, and he will lose the company.
Mm.
So we get Vince and Shane against Austin, as advertised, in a ladder match.
So this was supposed to be Tom Green, right, behind GTV?
Yeah, that's who Russo always said it was going to be. But Vince McMahon had no idea who Tom Green was.
Right. And I think we're better off for it. I used to be a huge Tom Green fan when I was a young kid, but how would he have fit into all this? It would have been terrible.
It would have just, I don't know, trying to get Tom Green on Raw.
Oh, that would have been bad.
So, I don't want to say one of the few, but this was a significant storyline that never did get solved.
Yep.
And later on in this show, we would have another cliffhanger that would never be solved.
Is that right? What did you think overall of the show long tease about possibly putting Vince in a handicap match or in a singles match and then eventually resolving to
I think it was a way to fill some time. I mean, this was like a show long storyline like this. It's much more designed for a television show where you hopefully can keep viewers tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
With a pay-per-view and I've spent my money,
yeah,
I'm not leaving.
I didn't really
this
understand.
Is more just to kind of tease. It's almost like, well, maybe we're not going to give you what you paid for. Okay, fine, we will.
No, I didn't really get to do this on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, but that is I don't know, there's storytelling.
Okay.
Austin comes out to a humongous pop, of which Jim Ross says that even Michael Jordan wouldn't receive one as big as this in North Carolina.
Okay.
Austin was very hot at this point in time. And Austin clotheslines both in the aisle. Crowd was just red hot for this match. It was clear that at this whole show, they want to see The Rock and they want to see Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
That was what was made perfectly clear during this show. Austin crotches Shane on the post, chases Vince, and Shane cuts him off with a clothesline. McMahon's double team him. Austin eventually stops Vince with a ladder, and they fight at the entrance where they had this gigantic setup of ladders where there was like a ceiling of ladders held up by ladders. Shane ended up climbing on top of this structure and flips off Austin. Austin climbs up, and then Shane gets punched, comes down as Austin then poses on top. Eventually, Austin puts Vince underneath this structure and throws Shane repeatedly into these ladders, which looked extremely awkward and painful, and eventually pulls out the ladders and they all fall on top of Vince and Shane in an impressive looking spot, and I think relatively safe. It didn't look like Vince and Shane took any of the brunt of these ladders.
It was as safe as having a car dropped on you.
Exactly. Narrowly missed them. They go back to the ring, and Shane takes a ladder in the gut. He gets sent to the announce table, and Austin hits an elbow off the ladder and puts Shane through the Spanish announce table. And then Austin is laid out by the table. Vince tries to climb the ladder, but Austin runs in with a low blow to Vince. And then Austin, he watches the ladder fall on top of Shane. Crowd was going nuts for just about everything Austin was doing here. And then Vince puts Shane on his shoulders to try and reach the briefcase without the ladder. And Austin punches Vince, knocks both of them down, stuns both Vince and Shane. He goes to climb the ladder, but then the briefcase is lifted up mysteriously, and Austin cannot grab the briefcase. And Austin goes to ringside asking everyone what's happening, and Vince and Austin end up fighting on the ladder. Shane tips the ladder, knocking both men down, and then Shane sprints up the ladder, grabs the briefcase as Vince has Austin's legs pinned down at 17 minutes and 13 seconds, and Vince and Shane regain control of the WWF, and they go off the air with this mystery of who screwed Austin here with the briefcase. And this was an infamous storyline that was never answered. And this was a rarity at the time. I mean, today we look at Jesus, who orchestrated the Vince attack by Nexus, who was the anonymous GM. I mean, this is kind of commonplace these days. But at this time, everyone always points to this storyline, and they ask to this day who it was supposed to be, because it was a rarity at this point. This was like the Hummer driver.
Who was it supposed to be? Has anybody asked Russo? Has anybody asked any of the writers?
It was Tom Green.
Oh boy. This is actually a very good match.
I enjoyed this match.
I love Austin's brawling style. It's just so full of energy. A lot of big bumps here with the McMahons. Basically, you're paying to see Steve Austin throw the McMahons through a bunch of ladders, and you definitely got that. It was the crowd was very hot. So to me, this was a match of the show.
And this was the whole premise here was Austin wanted to beat the shit out of Vincent Shane, and that's what he did for 18 minutes here. And it was such a contrast to the Cena Laurinaitis match we got last month, right, where it was just all comedy but built on the same premise.
Mm-hmm.
And one worked and one didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin, I mean, there were even spots where they were comedy spots where he just watches a ladder fall over on Shane, but it was always Austin just trying to murder these two. And the crowd was hot for this whole thing. And to me, I enjoyed this main event. It was the best match on the show, and Austin was just red hot at this time.
Your thoughts overall on this show?
I give this show a 1 out of 10 for that main event. I'll give it a 2 out of 10 because there were moments throughout the show, but they were very, very few and far between.
The
tournament sucked.
Yeah, it was terrible. A terrible King of the Ring tournament, all the way from the participants to the matches themselves. For that main event, I give it a 1.5 out of 10. Everything else is very forgettable.
So that was the 1999 King of the Ring. I apologize for picking this one. But let's see if anyone else had some contradictory opinions of this show, because this is a time that in wrestling that is often romanticized, but there were some bad shows during this time. And we go to Alan Jones, who starts us off. I have had this on DVD for a while. I watched it for the first time since I watched it live. This was by far one of the worst pay-per-views of all time. 3 half-good matches and a horrible King of the Ring tournament. When Road Dogg versus China is the best match of the tournament, you know you're in trouble. All Billy Gunn did after this was have a one-month feud with The Rock and then went back into mid-card status. Yeah, and he rejoined DX and rejoined the New Age Outlaws, we should note. We also never found out who raised the briefcase during the ladder match. Must have been the anonymous GM, who we also never found out who that was. Being 12 at the time, I watched this live. I thought this was a fun show, but it's sad when you watch a lot of the 99 stuff back and see how bad it was match-wise. P.S. As I was surfing through your archives, I came across this gem of Way singing Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls. Priceless stuff. I don't remember this.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. But, okay, well, thank you. Thank you for liking that. Andrew Sheehy says, I remember watching this show as a 9-year-old little Jimmy. The Kane and Big Show match was a train wreck. just like their most recent encounter on Raw a few weeks ago. The X-Pac Hardcore Holly bout was weak, with the man formerly known as Sparky Plug hitting Mr. Waltman with a chair for a cheap DQ finish. Holly's promo after that match was very good. Ken Shamrock did a great job of selling the internal injuries in his short match against Billy Gunn. It helped push his feud with Steve Blackman for next month's pay-per-view. And then he goes on, we'll just skip some of this. He says, the King of the Ring semifinal matches were mediocre and average at best, along with the final, as Billy Gunn ended up being the surprise winner. The World Wrestling Federation dropped the ball on Mr. Ass big time that year. The Rock Undertaker match was overbooked, to say the least. All that match did was set up an Austin title win on Raw is War that next night. Was that what happened? Did Austin win the title that very next
night? He did. He won it the night after this in what would be the most watched segment in Raw history.
Right.
Quarter hour.
Finally, the Austin McMahon ladder match for control of the company was okay but predictable. As a huge Austin fan at the time, I knew the McMahons were going to win with help from a mysterious man holding the briefcase on a Texas rattlesnake. How did the WWF refuse to reveal the identity of the man who raised the briefcase on Austin? That was a big fuck-up by the company.
Agreed, yeah. That was a big flaw. Dave Crawford writes, this show is the usual deal from 1999 WWF, with the star power of the main events carried things on top of some pretty brutal undercards. The tournament on the show was an argument in favor of only doing the semifinals and finals on the pay-per-view, as we just had a series of 3 to 5 minute matches, except for Road Dogg China, which inexplicably got 13 minutes. But no one got over as a result. Case in point, the heel run of Mr. Ass coming off this show was so successful that by September, he was a babyface teaming with Road Dogg again. Edge and Christian and the Hardys only got 5 minutes, but it was decent, and they showed flashes of what was to come, starting with the tit later on that year. Then we had the usual convoluted WWF title match. That's the stuff that was over huge at the time, but really that has to do more with star power than it being a great match or anything. The screwjob finish we got was in vogue in 99, so it's to be expected, and I can't really complain. Rock had only officially been a face for 2 months here, but you'd think it had been years given how everyone was into him. Speaking of convoluted, then it was main event time. The build-up for this one included, among plenty of other things, Vince turning face and briefly aligning with Austin before being revealed as the higher power, the introduction of Stephanie and Linda's characters, where to Stephanie and her near marriage to The Undertaker, Austin being named CEO, and finally the agreement to put total control of the company on the line here. The match was nothing special, but in the internet wrestling community, the result was months and months of debate over that burning question. Who raised the briefcase so Austin couldn't get it? I thought it was pretty obvious that it was the Big Boss Man, since he had been booted from the corporate ministry the week before and then was welcomed back in the next night. But a lot of people felt that since it was never directly explained that way, that it was just something that made no sense. Anyways, this wasn't a great show. It had no standout matches and no lasting repercussions, other than Mr. Ass being the butt of King of the Ring-related jokes. So I can't go any higher than a 2 out of 10.
Corey Ferreira, I was 6 when this show took place and had just become a fan of the WWF and wrestling in general. Overall, this show is not good by any means. It lacks any major moment like we got in 1998 with Mankind and Taker Hell in a Cell. The Austin McMahon ladder match is the most one-sided match I've seen Austin in. He just spends the entire match beating on Vince and Shane and loses because of the mystery man moving the briefcase out of Austin's reach, which was never answered. I will say I enjoyed the angle between Austin and McMahon going into the show, with Austin being the CEO of the WWF and running Titan Tower and the whole ministry and corporation angle in general, I was a fan of. As for the King of the Ring tournament, it's not that good. The theme of the 1999 King of the Ring seems to be DX, all of whom were hot going into the show following the breakup of the group. Billy Gunn beats Ken Shamrock, the guy who won the King of the Ring the year before, because why not? China and Road Dogg get a 13-minute match. Why would they book the match that long, while Edge and Christian and the Hardys get a lot less? The WWF title was meh and serves as a holding pen to continue the Rock and Triple H feud for the following month. Overall, a pretty poor show with not one standout match and arguably the worst King of the Ring winner in the Ass Man, Billy Gunn.
No, I don't think you can go below Mabel.
Yeah.
That to me is the low standard. Alexander Rios. Hello, John and Way. I've been out of it for a while since post-WrestleMania. I have, for the most part, stopped watching wrestling. The main reason is I got a girlfriend and started devoting most of my free time to her. Single now, so I've reverted to my first love of wrestling.
Good for you.
Oh, we're sorry about that, Alex, but great to have you back. King of the Ring. Damn, a show I remember so well. Not a great show by any means, but still a show I enjoy watching more than 2012 WWE. And I don't care what anyone says about Billy Gunn winning the King of the Ring and not becoming a main event star in singles. No King of the Ring is worse than Mabel. None. In fact, Billy Gunn might join the Hall of Fame on his tag credentials alone. Other than that, all I remember from the show was an Undertaker-Rock title match where The Rock had just turned babyface, I think, and Undertaker's ministry had joined the corporation. And Austin McMahon milked for its last few true dollars with a Vince Shane versus Austin ladder match. And of course, who can forget Austin at Titan Towers? Attitude era sentiment, give this show to me a 7 out of 10. P.S. A little known fact, but this show had Kurt Angle in a dark match with Stan Stasiak in his meat character.
Interesting. Brian Bennett says, call me crazy, but I love this show. Sure, the quality of the matches, aside from Undertaker versus Rock, was pretty garbage, but the nostalgia makes up for it for me. It's shows like these that remind me that although everyone looks at the Attitude Era so fondly, in reality, the shows were more often than not crap. The opener pissed me off. Why can't you open the show with a clean finish? It sets such a bad taste in my mouth. Kane versus Big Show is one of my favorite disaster matches of all time, and China versus Road Dogg was given almost as much time as the world title match, it seemed. King saying she can wrestle made me chuckle because it was so obvious how green China was. Sometimes I wish she should have just skipped wrestling and went straight to porn because this match was just painfully slow. The rest of the matches everyone has had were pretty spot everyone has already touched on, but I just want to say that I had no problem with Billy Gunn winning this tournament. How they dropped the ball afterwards is a different story, but Gunn and his legendary ass wasn't such a bad idea when you consider that the King of the Ring was almost always won by a guy who wasn't extremely over and they wanted to push, i.e. Mabel, Stone Cold at the time, Ken Shamrock, Edge. Everyone confuses the booking on the show with the aftermath, and I think they should be considered two different things.
Well, by no means was the booking of this tournament exactly lighting the spark that would be a main event. He had no momentum coming out of this night.
And the thing is, with all those guys, it's you were able to gauge their potential for success, and I suppose I personally never saw that in Billy Gunn.
Like, what a stupid character you have. Like, this is not a main event storyline. It's like if a guy was like a giant dildo and let's make him... Like, sounds as ludicrous as this. I am Mr. Ass. Listen to those lyrics of his theme song. And this guy's going to headline SummerSlam? I like to pick asses. I like to pick asses. Fuck off that this guy had potential with this gimmick. This was a killer. I would have put him with his fucking guns again, as the smoking guns, with a cowboy hat and a sheriff badge coming out, having a better chance of getting over than Mr. Ass, who likes to love him and loves to pick him. Better come up from behind.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Mr. Ass.
The rest of the show just gave me a good feeling, and I loved watching it. But for the fan in me that likes quality wrestling, this didn't do it. And I think we're far enough removed from how awesome it felt at the time to realize that maybe the Attitude Era wasn't as great as we like to think.
I'll disagree with that, because I boil everything down to how things did. If this was a horrible period of history, we could look back and be like, yeah, what were they thinking? This was working at the time. It was working tremendously at the time. So it's hard to argue with what works. It's not, of what holds up today. It's what works now. I will guarantee you, Wei, when we're doing this podcast in 2035, people are going to be talking about how great that 2012 period was. It wasn't the fact that Brodus Clay had an opening match gimmick. It was just the fact that... you know, he was underrated at the time. I think he should go into the WWE Hall of Fame myself.
Well, hold on a second.
What a great part of WWE history.
Does anybody look back at maybe like the 1993, 90, I don't know, the dark ages of the WWF, and do people look back at those years fondly?
I think there's people that look back at it in terms of some of the characters at the time of being fun characters.
Yeah.
And not slamming it as hard as probably people were at the time.
Right, okay.
There was, believe me, there's shit that is shit in any era. Mm-hmm. But I just find the more time passes, the more people look on things fondly. Let's go to who are we at? Corey Gibson here. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who tend to romanticize with 99 WWF. Not to be overly negative, but in my opinion, it's a grossly overrated period. The booking and in-ring work of the year left much to be desired in it. I do not think it's at all surprising that things started to turn around creatively after Russo and Ed Ferrara left for WCW late in the year, when by my count, only two WWF pay-per-views all year are worth rewatching: SummerSlam and No Mercy. I would say that's a pretty bad indictment of the quality of the shows around this time. The 99 King of the Ring may be the worst of the bunch. The booking of the tournament itself is a disaster. You get short, below-average matches, horrible finishes, a lame duck winner who failed to get over as a main event heel despite being slotted into a semi-main event feud with The Rock in the subsequent months. The two co-main events both suffer from the same problem: egregiously overbooked finishes. The Undertaker and Rock had a fine match, but were two ref bumps, a Triple H run-in, and an ether-filled rag really necessary? The conclusion I keep coming to is no. The idea of having a ladder match with two non-workers and Steve Austin, whose neck was a mess at the time, is something I would not classify as being one of the better ideas Vince Russo ever had. Not only is the match not particularly any good, it has an extremely insulting finish with the magical briefcase. This conclusion is on par with the higher power reveal in its wretchedness. In conclusion, this was a horrible show from top to bottom, one of the worst of 1999 easily. Illogical booking was a hallmark of this period, and it's very much so prevalent here. In fairness, Russo was kept at an arm's, you know, pace away from the main event. He was not exactly booking top to bottom here.
Hmm. Well, who was booking the main event?
Vince was very heavily involved in the main event picture, so right. I'm sure Russo had a voice, but I think putting everything solely on Russo would be overselling his influence.
Dennis Amaya says, I was excited to hear that you guys were going to review The King of the Ring 1999, but then I remembered what an awful show this was. Holy God, this was terrible. The King of the Ring tournament was awful. Who wants to see Kane in two matches in a row? Kane versus Show was hideous. The Road Dogg China match was shockingly fine. Road Dogg was one of the most over guys on the show. The ending also made sense with what happened on the pre-show. The finals was an average match. X-Pac deserves a gold medal for carrying Gunn to an average match. He isn't the worst King of the Ring, though. Mabel was awful and Shamrock went nowhere the prior year. The title match sucked. I don't think the bell ever rang for the match to start. There were no rules in wrestling at this time. It was plodding and slow. Excuse me. Then we go off to, Jesus. Okay, he says of the Hardys and Edge and Christian match, it was an awesome match for being only 5 minutes. The spear was awesome. I loved that match. Everything was crisp and fast. Oh, and I watched Heat before the show, and it was not good either. Undertaker did make something burst into flames, though. Overall, a show that typified the late 90s wrestling scene, all story and bad wrestling. A crap show overall. 2 out of 10 solely for the Hardys match.
We go over to our next bit of feedback here. Yes, the Who Moved the Briefcase show. I remember as a teenager being really excited to see where that one was going to lead, and then they never really explained it. If I recall correctly, they later retconned it to say it was the Big Boss Man, which would have been the worst non-swerve ever. It's as though they were going to reveal it as some awesome new addition, and then whoever it was supposed to be just fell through. Then the next night we got one of the worst, I've never heard of this term before, Deus Ex Machina moments.
Deus Ex Machina.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means like kind of like something that happens without like divine intervention. Like, it's like a device in a movie where, like, all of a sudden something comes completely unexpectedly.
Okay. Where Austin mentions that, by the way, just in case I lost that match, I booked myself into a title match the next night and am contractually permitted to beat up Vince McMahon. As for the rest of the show, I guess they thought the crowd really wanted to see the former DX fight each other over and over because that's what we got, with them building X-Pac as the sentimental underdog only to lose to Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn's King of the Ring run is remembered for two moments, being verbally bitch-slapped by The Rock and being verbally bitch-slapped by Edge. The Taker-Rock match was going okay until we got an ether-soaked rag, which made me wish for Joey Styles yelling out, "Take that crap back to Smoky Mountain." Anyhow, 4 out of 10 for the show. 8 out of 10 for reminding me to go watch Edge and Rock. Two guys with actual mic skills and charisma. Just unload on Billy Gunn. And we just got that ether at the Ring of Honor show. At Border Wars,
that's
remember?
That's funny.
Haas and the Briscoes.
Oh, brilliant. Danny Hernandez The main event with Steve Austin versus McMahon and McMahon. With a year of hindsight video packages, time for contemplation, and explanations from those involved, I still don't see how the storyline can possibly be considered to make the least bit of sense in any way. Vince tries to intro Steve Blackman as Shane's replacement, but that darn GTV reveals that Shane is fine after all, and he gets dragged out and into the match again. The result ended up meaning nothing to the storyline, since Vince was retired by Austin at the next pay-per-view, thus making the whole exercise pointless. Much like this entire show, which featured a tag wrestler winning King of the Ring when everyone, except the WWF, knew that his push would fail, Undertaker successfully defending his title only to lose it the next night and never get close to winning it again, and a confusing storyline. How did Linda and Stephanie get their 50% back, by the way? And a main event as stale as, well, this year's main event. The bottom line, if it wasn't for Heroes of Wrestling, this wins 99's worst show of the year, hands down.
Oh, that'd be tough, man, because WCW was on the roller coaster heading down at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, Heroes of Wrestling, you can't beat that. When was that WOW?
That wasn't until a few years later. And we'll finish off here with our last one. Hello, John Away. This review brought back a lot of bad memories. Why would the WWF at the time put Billy Gunn as the King of the Ring? It's safe to say that Billy was a better tag wrestler than a singles competitor. The rest of the card was pretty bad also. Seeing the McMahons inside the main event really didn't help the situation. The good thing about this main event was the video package. The only good match on the card was Edge and Christian against the Hardys, which I believe was their first meeting ever on pay-per-view. I would grade this show 1.5 out of 10. On a side note, I think you guys have an awesome city and one of the better ones in Canada for bachelor parties. Trust me, last weekend was one of the best weekends of my life when I celebrated my brother's bachelor party. If only now the city of Toronto could get rid of Dalton McGuinty, the province of Ontario would be much happier. Keep up the great work, guys.
Do we have a great bachelor party city?
I guess we do, because that's someone who... Have you gone to any bachelor parties recently, Wei?
I've never been to any bachelor party.
I don't think I have either, to be honest.
Oh, I've been to one friend's bachelor party. He's a devout Christian, so we didn't really do much.
Sounds like a hell of a bachelor party.
Yeah, it was not much.
Was there any drinking involved?
A little bit, but not too much.
Of tea?
Nah, yeah.
Holy water.
Gatorade. You know, going back to your point, though, John, this was certainly a good time for business for the company, but you could argue that they could have done even better had this show been successful, had they built a bigger star coming out of this tournament.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, you didn't produce a character in Billy Gunn that was going to draw anywhere. What would you have done in this situation?
At this time, I mean, just looking through the roster, who was really primed for that spot? Oh my God! I'm just,
you know, I really believe, like, as much as the guy had shortcomings, and I know took a lot of criticism and stuff, I just thought Big Show was booked poorly from day one. But you could have really, like, the original plan was that guy was going to come in and he was going to headline the following year's WrestleMania as this unstoppable giant, mm-hmm. and Austin beat him clean, like within his second month in the company on TV for free, and I mean he could have been a candidate.
I suppose, like, looking through the mid-card of this roster, the participants in this tournament, maybe Billy Gunn isn't the worst choice.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the roster was not super deep. It's not like you saw any guys that jumped out at you as, you know...
Road Dogg, China.
Maybe China.
X-Pac.
Queen China.
Oh, I'm sure that they thought about that idea.
Maybe.
All right.
Well, that's going to wrap up our review of King of the Ring 1999, a show that was just panned by you people, not fans of the 1999 King of the Ring.
I think you guys went into this show wanting to hate.
Guys, you really have to have a more positive attitude, I think, here. You have to like shows that others like. You have to have the same opinion. That's what I'm told.
All right.
Daily, it seems.
Okay, enough.
All right, enough. I'm the asshole. So next week, Wei, what are we going to review?
We are going to review, in honor of the 1,000th episode of Raw, we are going to review episode number one.
Number one. There was a time when Raw was 1 hour every week. I'm looking forward to this.
1 hour.
I'm going into it with a positive outlook.
Okay. What was on that show?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I mean,
we didn't get it in Canada.
in a lot of video packages, they always show like highlights from that first show. But I've never seen the whole thing myself.
January the 11th of 1993.
How do you know that?
Because I looked it up before we started today.
Oh, okay.
So I had to find it. It's easily accessible online, so just search for it and you'll probably find it. It's a one-hour show, and that is what we're going to chat about next week. Episode number one of Raw, featuring Vince McMahon, Randy Savage, and comedian Rob Bartlett on commentary.
Wow.
It should be a fun one.
All right.
So that's going to be coming up next week. In the meantime, folks, you can check out liveaudiowrestling.com. Our message board is where you can leave all your feedback at lawradio.proboards.com. You can follow Way at Way0937 at Law Radio. And Way, let's go out with Goo Goo Dolls singing Iris.
Why?
Because it's going to bring back memories for people.
I feel like we probably went out with that song.
Okay, well, let's not
that
then.
Show.
Let's go out then with...
How about Ether?
Isn't that what you guys used a few weeks ago?
No.
Oh, that was another rap beef song.
This whole podcast.
Okay, we can go out with Ether.
This whole podcast.
I think Ether is a very appropriate one because of the booking of the Rock Undertaker match and our discussion. So let's go out with Ether, the way that rappers solve problems.
By talking.
And calling each other names.
Fuck Jay-Z. What's up, niggas? And yo, I know you ain't talking about me, dog. You? What?
Fuck Jay-Z.
You been on my dick, nigga. You love my style, nigga.
Fuck Jay-Z.
Fuck with your soul like ether. Well, teach you the king, you know you. Nah. Godson across the belly. Lose. I prove you lost already.
Brace yourself for the main event. Y'all impatiently waiting. It's like an AIDS test. What's the results? Not positive. Who's the best? Pac, Nas, and Big. Ain't no best. East, west, north, south, floor style greetings. I embrace y'all with napalm. Blows up, no guts, left chest face gone. How can I be garbage? Send me autos at your cottage. Burner at the side of your dome. Come out of my throne. I got this. Lock since 9-1. I am the truest. Name a rapper that I ain't influenced. Gave y'all chapters. For now, I keep my eyes on the Judas. With Hawaiian soapy fame, kept my name in his music. Check it. Fuck with your soul like ether. Well, teach you the king, you know you. Godson across the belly. Lose. I prove you lost already. Ayo, pass me the weed. Put my ashes out on these niggas, man. Ayo, you faggots. Y'all kneel and kiss the motherfucking ring. Fuck with your soul like ether. Well, teach you the king, you know you. Godson across the belly. Lose. I prove you lost already. I've been fucked over. Left for dead. Distant. Forgotten. Luck ran out. They hope that I'd be gone. Stiff and rotten. Y'all just piss on me. Shit on me. Spit on my grave. Talk about me. Laugh behind my back. But in my face. Shot some well wishes. Friendly acting. Envy hiding snakes. With your hands out for my money. Man, how much can I take when these streets keep calling? Heard it when I was asleep. That this Jay-Z and Cockefeller Records wanted beef. Started cocking up my weapon. Slowly loading up this ammo to explode it on a camel. And his soldiers, I can handle this Fedolo. And his manuscript just sounds stupid when KRS already made an album called Blueprint. First, Biggie's your man. Then you got the nerve to say that you better than Big. Dick sucking lips. Won't you let the late great veteran live? Well, now, son across the belly. Lose. I prove you lost already. The king is back. Where my crown at? Ill will, rest in peace. Let's do it, niggas. Fuck with your soul like ether. Will. Teach you the king, you know you. Godson across the belly. Lose. I prove you lost already. Y'all niggas deal with emotions like bitches. What's sad is I love you because you're my brother. You traded your soul for riches. My child, I've watched you grow up to be famous. And now I smile like a proud dad watching his only son that made it. You seem to be only concerned with dissing women. Were you abused as a child, scared to smile? They called you ugly? Well, life is harsh. Hug me. Don't reject me. I'll make records to disrespect me. Blatant or indirectly. In 88, you was getting chased to your building, calling my crib, and I ain't even give you my numbers. All I did was give you a style for you to run with, smiling in my face, glad to break bread with the guard, wearing jazz chains, no text, no cash, no cars, no jail bars, jigger, no pies, no case, just Hawaiian shirts. Hanging with Little Chase, you a fan, a phony, a fake, a pussy, a stand. I still whip your ass. You 36 in a karate class, you Tai Boho, trying to work it out. You trying to get brolic? Ask me if I'm trying to kick knowledge. Nah, I'm trying to kick the shit you need to learn though. The ether, the shit that make your soul burn slow. Burn. Is he Dame Diddy, Dame Daddy, or Dame Dummy? Oh, I get it.
You Biggie and he's Puffy. Yeah. Rockefeller died of AIDS, that was the end of his chapter. And that's the guy I chose to name your company after. Put it together, I rock hoes, y'all rock fellas. And now y'all trying to take my spot, fellas. Philly's hot rock, fellas. Put you in a dry spot, fellas. In a pine box with 9 shots for my Glock, fellas. Foxy got you hot cause you kept your face in a puss. What you think you getting girls now cause of your looks? Negro, please. You know mustache having with whiskers like a rat compared to beans you whack. And your man sat on and made you take the blame. You ass went from Jazz to hanging with Kane to Irv to Big. And Eminem murdered you on your own shit. You a dick rotted faggot. You love the attention. Queens niggas run you niggas. Ask Russell Simmons. Huh. R.O.C. get gunned up and clap quick. J.J. Evans get gunned up and clap quick. Your whole damn record label gunned up and clap quick. Sean Carter to Jay-Z, damn you on Jazz Dick. So little shorty's getting gunned up and clap quick. How much of Biggie's rhymes is gonna come out your fat lips? Wanted to be on every last one of my classics. You pop shit, apologize, nigga, just ask Kiss.